Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of KSRN. I'm your host, Kyle Watson. Joining me tonight will be my friends Ryan Waterman and Dan O'Brien to talk some Eagles offseason news. A lot's going on the past several months, and we're getting up into the NFL draft at the end of April. Obviously, the signings of DeMarco Murray, the signings of Ryan Matthews, and the training for Sam Bradford were huge. So we'll welcome in Ryan and Dan. We have someone on the line. Ryan, is that you?
Hey, Kyle. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. So Dan will be joining us in a couple minutes. So, Ryan, I got a chance to talk to you last time on me and Mark's show about some of the moves, so we'll get more in the hand into that, and I'll get Dan's opinion on it in a minute. Let me review the DeMarco Murray signing. 5 years, $40 million deal, plus an additional $2 million in incentives, $21 million guaranteed and $5 million signing bonus, $5 million cap hit this year. He's 27, fifth year in the NFL. Obviously, he led the NFL last year in rushing yards with 1,845 and 115 per game. He also led the league in attempts, 392, touchdowns, 13, and yards from scrimmage with over 2,200. Now the Eagles have a more balanced attack with him, Matthews, and Sproles. Do you see there being a problem with Murray as far as a lot of times when running backs have had so many carries like he did, the next year there's a big drop-off. Do you see that being the case?
I don't see a huge drop-off. I mean, obviously he's going to regress because he almost ran for 1,900 yards last year. That's absolutely insane. I don't expect him to do that at all again this year. I don't see a huge regression. I still think he's going to crack the 1,000-yard mark on the season. Everyone's really bashing the move, saying that it makes no sense for the Eagles to sign him to such a lucrative deal. He's not worth it. I truly think he is because he adds another dimension to this team that we've lacked since the departure of Westbrook. I'm not going to say he's a power runner, but he is a very heavy runner that's not afraid to run into the tackles instead of around the tackles. He's not afraid to push through for the extra 30 yards, if you will.
Yeah, and Dan, what did you think of the DeMarco Murray deal? Do you see it being a problem next year as far as his workload, or do you think he'll be healthy considering there's Matthews and Sproles here?
I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a great offense. The problem, I think, is eventually, I think we all can agree that Sam Bradford is going to be traded for Mariota at some point. And from what I heard, DeMarco Murray is mainly here because of Sam Bradford. So what happens, say, if Bradford gets traded? What does DeMarco Murray think about that, even though his deal is already signed? Like, I mean, this is the opinion change. I don't know what he thinks about that.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting topic. Ryan, what do you think? Did Bradford coming here have a lot to do with Murray, or do you think it was just the money and the market? Because that's actually a good point. And I was thinking that myself. You know, the deal's already signed, so I don't think he can back out of it.
Yeah, he can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I'm sure his opinion of the Eagles would change if they promised him Bradford would be here. Now, I don't think any such promise was made.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, do you think part of the why he came was Bradford, or do you just think it was the money?
Yeah, I definitely think part of it was Sam Bradford because they were huge college friends in Oklahoma, and the familiarity is there, the chemistry is there. So I would expect that to have been played a big part in his decision. But I do think the major part that played was money. I mean, nobody was willing to offer him more than $6 million a year, and then in come the Eagles offering him $8 million a year. Obviously, you're going to take that no matter what.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys were only willing to go $5 million, which kind of surprised me. I mean, I know a lot of Murray's success last year was kind of a byproduct of their strong offensive line, arguably the best in the league, one that they had drafted heavily on. I believe four straight first-round picks were devoted to their offensive line. I guess I'll start with you, Dan. How much of Murray's success was Dallas's offensive line?
You know what? I think, honestly, being an Eagles fan, I was so afraid of watching them play the Cowboys because DeMarco Murray is such a wrecking ball of a force. And I didn't – it's so great that he's a part of our team now, but I was so afraid of him when he was in Dallas. So the fact that he's no longer present there is a good sign for us. So he was a major factor there.
Yeah, and Ryan, what do you feel about that as far as his success if you take away the Dallas offensive line?
Yeah, I definitely got to agree with Dan. Not taking away any credit from Dallas' offensive line because they played absolutely incredible football last year, but DeMarco Murray is just a force unto himself. I mean, yeah, they created a lot of holes for him, but Murray fought for the extra yards. Murray broke through tackles. He's a very heavy runner. And I think he created a lot of his opportunities on his own.
Yeah, and he's obviously a lot different runner than McCoy was. McCoy was more side to side, as we all know, whereas Murray's more kind of front to back, is kind of the best way of putting it. And last year he actually averaged just under 25 carries per game. I think we all can agree that with, like I mentioned, with Matthews signing and retaining Sproles, he's not going to have as many carries. I see him, you know, trimming that that average down like 5 or 6 carries a game. Maybe less. It depends on the game as far as the margin of it. If we're up by a lot of points, I'm sure they're not going to have to rely on Murray as much, and they're not going to want to risk injury. And Ryan Matthews signed a 3-year, $11 million deal, $5 million guaranteed, and a $3 million signing bonus. His salary in 2015 is $1 million. He's 27 as well. He missed 10 games last year due to a sprained ankle, but he should be 100% now. And over his career, he's had 2 1,000-yard seasons, including over 1,200 2 years ago. What did you make of the Ryan Matthews deal, Ryan?
I like the deal. I feel it gives the Eagles depth because now they're not going to have to rely so much on Murray. Murray's not necessarily going to be the workhorse of the backfield. I do think he's going to get the majority of the carries, but he's not going to see as many carries as he did last year because you've got Matthews here and you still have Sproles. I also think Matthews is going to play a nice part in the receiving game. Not many people were paying attention to San Diego when he was there, but he did play a decent part in the pass game with Phillip Rivers. So I'd expect him to be an underrated option for Sam Bradford or Marcus Mariota, whoever is the quarterback come starting today.
Yeah, it's actually, before I get your opinion on that, Dan, actually you had made a good point. He's actually a very versatile running back. His second year in San Diego in 2011, he had almost 500 receiving yards, and he had over 1,000 rushing yards. So we're talking around 1,500 all-purpose yards. So he's definitely a guy that can give you some options. What did you make of the Ryan Matthews deal, Dan? Did you like it? Does it really matter much considering they signed Murray, or is it a good addendum to Murray?
I do like it. I don't see a problem with it. And what the other guy was saying is I think he's going to be basically like Darren Sproles. They're going to give him the ball every other play. He's not going to be relied on as much. Chip Kelly's going to have a phenomenal offense. I think his problem now is he's going to have to decide what he wants to do as quarterback-wise. I honestly don't see Sam Bradford being here, which I think could be a problem with DeMarco Murray in the future because, as we all said, DeMarco Murray and Sam Bradford are friends. So if Bradford's gone, do we get either Mariota or, from what I'm hearing now, Tim Tebow, which I don't know if that's a good idea or not, seeing he's been out of the league for, 3 years now?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually segueing into that. What would you guys feel if they got Tebow? Would you like that move? Would you endorse it, Dan? Or if he's a backup, would it matter?
I think they would keep him as a backup, or maybe I know he plays other positions. I would keep him as maybe some other kind of position. I don't know if quarterback wise, because how many quarterbacks do we have now? What, 4?
We have 4.
If we had signed Tebow, we would have had 4. They're looking to trade Barkley so they can sign Tebow.
Yeah, Barkley, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, so I guess it wouldn't matter much to you, Dan, since Tebow would most likely be a backup. So say whoever our starter is next year, assuming it's not Tebow, assuming we sign him, would you be okay with him starting a couple games as a substitute for an injured starter like Sanchez did this year, or would you would you rather just him stay on the bench for a couple snaps?
Tebow, we're talking about.
Yeah, Tebow.
I you know what? I don't see why not. I mean, give the guy a chance, but it's going to be rough because he hasn't played for so long. I mean, Sanchez at least played a year and a half before he came to the Eagles. Tebow has been out of the league for 3 years now, I think. So it's kind of rough.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a double-edged sword there.
The last time the last season he played was 2012 with the Jets, which he was a fullback / tight end. He only started twice that year. And the last time he started a significant amount of games was 2011 as a QB with Denver. He went 7-4 that year, but his completion percentage was really bad, 46.5, which most guys you want to be around at least 55-60%, and anything under that. Although he had a decent TD-INT ratio of 12-6. So he doesn't really turn over the ball that much, even though we really haven't seen that much of him. What would you think of a Tebow deal, Ryan? I think I remember you and me talking about it. I think I remember you saying you wouldn't like it, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I really wouldn't like it primarily because it would bring an absolute media circus. I mean, the media ESPN was practically salivating when it broke that he worked out for the Eagles. So imagine if they signed him. As far as Tebow's actual playing goes, I think he's a relatively solid option as a backup. Maybe start a couple games here and there like Sanchez did last year. He's been working on his mechanics this offseason, and the coach that he's been working with said that he's looked great. He's more accurate with his throws. He's getting more spiral on the ball. So I'm interested to see what happens, and I'm hoping that he can get a second chance in the NFL because he's a really good guy.
Yeah, and what do you guys see happening with we'll get back to the Bradford debate, and also I want to get your opinion on Matt Barkley. Actually, a couple news real quick. Actually, a few days ago, NFL Network's Charlie Casserly reported that the Browns at some point offered the Eagles a first-round pick for Bradford. It's unknown if the pick was offered before or after its trade to Philly, but it's certainly possible the Eagles could trade Bradford to the Browns for the actually, I'm not sure what pick they have, but I think they have a pretty high pick this year. Would you guys do that? Bradford for, I think they have a top 10 pick.
Cleveland has number 12 and number 19 this year.
Okay, so a lot of people were saying, I figured it was 19, but I wasn't sure if they had a higher pick than that. Would you guys trade that, Bradford for that, number 19? Ryan, I'll start with you.
Debatable, man. Oh, sorry.
For number 19, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
Yeah, for number 19, I wouldn't. I would have to have it. I would have to get at least number 12 because I would want to solidify my chances to get Mariota before I trade Bradford. I'm not comfortable with Sanchez under center.
No, me neither. Dan, would you have done that deal, or would you have done something better?
I wouldn't have done that deal. No, I agree. I don't think it would have been a good deal. And even in that interview, Chip Kelly said he got a first round offer. It was from the Browns, from what we found out. I think it was for Sam Bradford when he was talking last week on TV. So I don't know if I would have done that deal or not.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to see what happens because a lot of teams are interested in getting Mariota, and a lot of draft experts are saying that the Eagles will trade up to get him, and that he'll go number two overall. A lot of people were saying he wasn't originally going to go number two, but I was kind of surprised that they picked him that high because about a couple months ago, a bunch of people on mock drafts had him more like in the 15 to 20 range. Where do you guys see him going? I'll start with you, Ryan.
I think he's probably going to go number two. For some reason, there's been just a spark in his draft stock as of late. I don't know if it's because of his performance or if it's because of the interest in him, but you've got multiple teams going after him now. You've got Cleveland going after him. You've got Eagle going after him. Tennessee is going after him. Reports have said that New Orleans are going after him. And now a report surfaced today that the Chargers are offering Phillip Rivers and their first-round pick to Tennessee for number two to go after Mariota. So the Eagles are really going to have to step up their game if they really want Mariota, or they're just going to have to sit tight with Bradford, I think.
And Chip Kelly actually said that he wasn't going to mortgage the future, but head coaches also say a lot of things. I wonder how true that was. Actually, about an hour ago, NFL media analyst Daniel Jeremiah says the Browns, according to him, the Browns need Mariota more than any other team. Quote, when Chip Kelly said he'd been offered a first-round pick, it seems like that was the Cleveland Browns for Sam Bradford type deal. This tells me Cleveland is not happy with their current quarterback situation. To me, that makes them the team that most in need of an upgrade at that position. But a lot of teams are going after his services, and Cleveland's been unhappy with Manziel after he went 22nd last year. So I don't know. I see them trading Matt Barkley too, which NBC Washington's Diana Marie Rossini confirms. This was a few days ago that they were going to trade Barkley and that he was on the trading block. She also reports that a Barkley trade would mean that there's an 80% chance Tebow becomes an Eagle. So, I don't know. Does Barkley get traded? Does Tebow come here? It's kind of interesting. In other news, the Eagles also restructured outside linebacker Connor Barwin's contract. It guarantees him more money, actually $6.4 plus $3 million in 2016. It's a slight raise after he made the Pro Bowl and led the league in sacks last year with 14.5. What are your guys' expectations for him this year? Ryan, do you see him? I don't think he's going to have 14.5 sacks again, but I see him have another good year. I don't think it was just a byproduct of the scheme either. I'm still not a fan of Billy Davis, but I think Barwin's on point for another 10, 11.5 sack season. What do you think?
I definitely think Barwin could have another year like last year. I definitely think he could have another 15 sack season. The defensive line, the front seven, has just been absolutely fantastic over the past couple seasons. And with the addition of Kiko Alonso, I think they just get better. Like you said, I'm not a big fan of Billy Davis. I don't think he's a bad defensive coordinator. I just think he was handed a bad set of personnel. And I think now that they're getting better players in there, you're going to slowly but surely start to see Davis get better and better with his play calling. But I do see Barwin having another good year this year, maybe even go for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah. What do you make of Barwin's future, Dan?
Yeah, I was going to agree. I think he's going to have another good year. But the thing I'm most concerned about with the Eagles is hopefully they're going to find another wide receiver. I don't know when that's going to happen now. Hopefully in the draft, but we'll see.
Yeah, actually, I'll get to that in a moment. Actually, I said Barwin led the league. He actually was fourth in the NFL and actually led the NFC. So we'll kind of see what happens with that. I still think he has some mileage left, and I don't think he's past the point. He's 28, which isn't really too old, and he seems to fit well in this scheme. So actually, going into what you just talked about, Dan, what do you see happening this offseason with as far as wide receivers? Because losing Jeremy Maclin, I think he was overpaid, but we still should have retained him. Do you see us picking up somebody in the draft? I guess that's probably the best course of action right now.
I honestly believe that Jeremy Maclin should have stayed. I always liked Maclin. And during the draft, I think the Eagles mostly are going to go towards getting a wide receiver. Don't be surprised if Mariota doesn't even get picked up, even though we all want him to get picked up first round by the Eagles. But I think Chip Kelly is eventually going to look for a wide receiver first, because we have all these quarterbacks right now. It would make sense to go for a wide receiver. because there's nobody there. Macklin's gone.
Yeah. What do you see Macklin doing this year in Kansas City, Dan? Do you see him having? Because honestly, when I was doing some research on it, obviously he's playing under Andy Reid, and he's playing under the scheme in Kansas City is different. So it's not kind of a one or two wide receiver guy. And also Alex Smith's throwing to him, who's been very inconsistent and arguably a very good bust draft-wise in his career. Do you see him having like 1,000 yards, 1,200 yards a year next year, or what are your expectations for Macklin?
If it's not next year, it's going to be the year after, because you got to remember, him and Andy Reid had that past history, so I think he's going to work well under that Andy Reid playing. So I think it's going to be pretty well. If it's not this year, it's going to be next year. He's going to do good things for Kansas City.
And he's not even that old either. He's 26 now, and he just came off his first 1,000-yard season and his second season with 10 or more touchdowns. And in the offseason, actually about 10 days ago, they agreed with him to a 5-year, $55 million contract with $22.5 million guaranteed. I think the Eagles were willing to pay him like in the $35-40 million range, what I heard, but I don't think they were willing to go that far, and that's what kind of set him apart. Ryan, what do you see happening with Macklin this year before we go any further on the draft? Do you see him having a similar year as he did last year? Last year he had 85 catches, 1,318 yards, and 10 touchdowns.
I definitely think he takes a big step back this year. Because of the change of scenery. I know he's going into a familiar offense with Andy Reid, but the fact that you've got Alex Smith at quarterback, Alex Smith is not a quarterback like Nick Foles or Mark Sanchez. I don't think Alex Smith has the arm to be able to air it out. I see him as more of a game manager than anything, and that was proven last year when Kansas City was the only team in the NFL to have zero touchdown catches from their wide receivers. I think Macklin takes a big step back this year.
And I think that with Macklin going, that'll make way for Jordan Matthews, who I think could have a breakout year. I don't like Riley Cooper. I'm not sure about Josh Huff just yet. What do you see happening? I'll start with you, Ryan. What do you see happening with Jordan Matthews and Huff this year? Since I'm assuming you guys agree that Riley Cooper won't have a good year, although Nick Foles did like him, and obviously now with Foles gone, he's more of a less target. I'm not sure who our quarterback's going to be next year, but especially if Mariota's here, there's going to be more balance, because you're going to have Mariota throw it maybe like 15, 20 times a game. He's going to run in a significant amount of time, and obviously you got three backs, so they're not going to have to rely on Cooper as much. So what do you see happening with guys like Matthews and Huff next year?
Well, from what I'm hearing, if the Eagles decline on the opportunity to draft a wide receiver in the first couple rounds, I do see them going with Josh Huff and Jordan Matthews as their numbers one and two receivers. I don't think Kelly is a big fan of Cooper. I think that he's going to slowly but surely start working his way out of the system and out of the team. I do think he's going to get cut either sometime in the middle of the season or early next offseason. I'm expecting a breakout year from both Matthews and Huff this year. I honestly believe there's no reason not to expect it. There's wide-open competition between both of them. They're both competing for the number one spot. They're both going to push each other to greater lengths. But I'm expecting more out of Huff this year.
Dan, what do you think happens with them? Do you like Huff and Matthews, or do you see somebody else being a better fit?
Well, actually, I like them both, but I don't know what's going to happen next year. It's always everything's always remained to be seen, as what we're talking about with Riley Cooper. I think he had an awful year last year, but you never know for next year. And with the whole new offense being restructured and everything, it's going to be tough to pinpoint. It's going to be a next year situation where everything's going to be kind of like the team is basically demolished. And the year after, I believe, is going to be the year that things are going to get better. Because Chip Kelly basically built this team up to be his Oregon Ducks. He's got 10 players from Oregon on there. I think it's eventually going to be structured out very differently in a year or two.
Yeah. Cooper, this year, only had 55 catches and 577 yards, only 3 touchdowns. The previous year, which I think a lot of it was being under the tutelage of Nick Foles, I think they had a good good relationship. 2 years ago, he had 835 yards and 8 touchdowns. So he definitely took a big step back, although I don't think he's all that good of a player to begin with. But he signed a pretty long deal. He's here through 2018, and he's set to make $4 million this year, which I think we all can agree is not worth that much. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. And in the draft, is there a good chance that we draft a wide receiver in the first few rounds, Ryan? Or do you think we trade up and get Mariota and we won't really have any picks left to draft a wide receiver?
No, I think Kelly's smart enough to not mortgage the future. I mean, look at what Washington did. They basically handicapped themselves for the years to come. I do see the Eagles drafting a wide receiver in the first round. I've heard many names from Jalen Strong out of Arizona State to Dorial Green-Beckham out of Oklahoma. I've heard that the Eagles have shown interest in Amari Cooper out of Alabama, although that would involve trading up, so I'm not sure how likely that one is. But it'll be interesting to see where they go and how many they draft.
Yeah, Tampa has the number one pick. Tennessee has the number two. Jacksonville 3, Oakland 4, Redskins 5, and I think the Jets said they wouldn't agree to pick Mariota. So if they got that pick, assuming he's still there, that would be an option. But some of these teams, they need quarterbacks more than anything, and it depends on the what the coach feels too. Because I don't know, it's kind of interesting because I think Winston will go one, and I don't know. I wonder if Dante Fowler, who's the defensive end slash outside linebacker out of Florida, will either go to Tennessee or Jacksonville. And then you have a couple other defensive ends and Leonard Williams and Vic Beasley that are projected to go within the top five as well as Shane Ray out of Missouri. Dan, what do you see happening in the draft? Do you see us drafting Mariota and then a lot of wide receivers? We also need a safety, too, since McCourty was basically the best safety on the market and he re-signed. So what do you see happening with the draft?
I think eventually, as Chip Kelly said in the press conference, he's not going to risk getting anything for Marcus Mariota. But you never know what he's like. I think during the draft he's going to find a way to get his quarterback, even though it's going to put a big barrier between the other quarterbacks. I don't know what's really going to happen. I think his best move would be to get a wide receiver. That's what I think. If I were Chip Kelly, I already have 3 quarterbacks. I need a wide receiver. Mariota comes later, if he comes to play at all.
And a lot of these guys are really unproven. I mean, Josh Huff is here through 2017, but, I mean, we really haven't seen a lot of him yet because since his he really didn't get all that many snaps last year in his rookie year. And Matthews was kind of, now that he's not behind Macklin, assuming we don't trade somebody or draft somebody in the first round, he's really going to get a good crack too. He actually didn't have that bad of a year last year, Matthews. 872 receiving yards, 8 touchdowns, and almost 70 catches. And he's a very big guy, and he's also going to be here for a few more years. So you're going to get a good chance to see what some of these guys are going to do. I really like Zach Ertz the best out of all their options. I know he's not a wide receiver, but I really think he's a guy that really is really dynamic, whereas Brent Celek's more of a blocking tight end who can also catch. But I see that being an interesting focal point in the upcoming months. Now, the draft's from April 30th through May 2nd in Chicago, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. So Unless you guys had any other topics, I'm going to get into some Flyers. It'd be interesting to see what happens with Bradford. There's actually one note on Bradford I want to get to before I switch topics. If Bradford starts less than 50% of the games this year, the Eagles will also get a fourth-round draft pick. If he gets injured and doesn't play at all, they'll also receive a third-rounder in 2016. And they also got him alongside a fifth-round pick this year. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And moving forward to the Flyers, they've been in a total tailspin as of late. Pretty much very little odds of making the playoffs. This team is sloppy all over the board. For a while, it was just their defense, but now their offense, especially 5-on-5, for whatever reason, has taken a turn for the worst. If I were Ron Hextall, I would fire Berube. I would try to improve the draft and improve the defense through the draft. But I really like the young core of players we have in the minors, and I like the fact that he's being patient, unlike some of the previous GMs like Holmgren, and even Ed Schneider was being impatient and pushing Holmgren to make certain moves, like Brzgalov and mortgaging the future and getting rid of Bobrovsky after one bad playoff. So what do you guys make of the Flyers? Do you see it being solely the offense and the defense? Ryan, what do you make of it?
Well, to start, they are just terrible this year. I mean, I don't know what happened, but they've got no heart. They've got no fire. They've got no passion. It's like they're just zombies, just like walking through the motions on the ice. They seem to have tuned out Berube, which I said to you a couple months ago on one of our other radio shows. They seem to have just tuned him out. They're not listening to anything he's saying. Nothing's getting through. So I think they really have no choice but to blow this team up. Truthfully, I wouldn't be surprised to see Hextall trade Giroux at the draft. I mean, I'm not saying Giroux is the problem by any means, but if Hextall wants to set an example, that may be the best way to do it, whether it's a popular decision or not. I could see them going after Mike Babcock, too, after firing Berube. But I think the primary focus is going to be on improving the offense because they need secondary scoring badly. Voracek and Giroux can't do it all. And outside of Voracek and Giroux, they don't have many options. They have Simmons. They occasionally have Shen Reed when they decide they want to show up. Occasionally they have Couturier. He needs more playing time to get more scoring options, though. But I think primary focus is going to be on offense with secondary focus on defense.
What do you make of Michael Roffel? Because he had been injured, and he's really not seeing power play time, surprisingly, not even on the second unit. And for whatever reason, Berube, and I know I keep telling you this, he keeps giving Braden Schenn like first-line minutes, second-line minutes, when there's other guys that have been consistently better, like Roffel. And even I think he's misusing LeCavalier too. But it's surprising that they're a 500 team this year. For most of the season, they've had a winning record. Yet they're 24th in the NHL ranked in goals for per game with 2.5, and 23rd in goals against per game with 2.8, and they're 29th on the penalty kill. Dan, Have you been able to see the Flyers as of late? What do you think the problems are? Because it seems like it's, like Ryan said, and which I agree with, it's not a quick fix. I think they have to pretty much return the whole team and try to start from scratch. What do you
see?
Yeah,
when I think of the Flyers, I think of them now, I think of the Phillies, of how awful they are. And the whole team, I believe, needs to be imploded and started over. Funny story, I was actually at a game maybe a month or two ago. My brother got season tickets, or he got box tickets from his work, and he's actually in the press box right next to Ed Schneider. So we were in the box right next to his, and this was, I think we were playing the Vancouver Canucks, and they lost 4-0. And by the end of the second period, Schneider was already gone because he was out there watching. We saw him play, him and his cronies that were sitting there with him. They were all gone by the end of the second period. So it's just the fact that I haven't seen a Flyers team this bad in a long time. I mean, when you think of the good Flyers team, you think of like the late 90s, early 2000s, and it's just not the same way anymore. I think Snyder knows it, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what Hextall is going to do, but that also remains to be seen.
Yeah, actually the game you're talking about was January 15th versus Vancouver, 4-0 loss.
Yeah.
And actually that game, Emery started, which I don't know why he gives Emery a lot of starts, though. Emery seems to be kind of up and down, and Berube just kind of seems to like him. But with the defense, I was glad they gave Tiemannin a chance to go to a cup winner in Chicago, and you know they moved Coburn. So some of these guys may not even be here next year. What do you see happening with the defense? Do you see them bringing up like Ghost, Morin, and Hag, or do you see them waiting? I'll start with you, Ryan.
Well, for starters, referencing Dan's mention of late 90s, early 2000s team, I still think Snyder is stuck in the whole bullies mentality where it's a kind of like a muck and grind play, not a a fast shoot it, not dip to do, but just put it on the net type of play.
Yeah, he seems to be caught up in that.
As far as the defense goes?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say he definitely just kind of set in his ways, and he doesn't let GMs do their job, but it seems like Hextall's at least trying to put together a formidable team for the future. What were you going to say about the defense?
As far as the defense goes, I think they wait a couple more years on Ghost and Hag. I think Morin's probably the most NHL-ready out of all the defensemen. Maybe Hag gets a shot next year if he shines in training camp. I don't think Ghost is ready. I think he needs another year in the AHL, especially after tearing his ACL this year.
Yeah, what do you make of the future, Dan? Do you see them bringing up a lot of the guys, a lot of the young kids next year, or do you see this being like a 3-4 year deal?
I think it's going to be like a 4 or 5 year deal. I don't know. I think they're going to be dragging their feet with this. But, again, I don't know what Snyder's thinking. I don't know what he has up his sleeve. As long as I see Wayne Simmonds beating somebody up, I'm happy. So.
Actually, Ray Emery's a free agent next year. Do you see him coming back?
No, he's not coming back. He's too old.
And plus, his lateral movement is very poor. He's very inconsistent. When he's played good, he's been consistent. But then a lot of times he regresses. He's 32, and he has some mileage. What do you see happening with Emery, Ryan? Do you see him being back next year, or do you think he's gone as well?
I definitely think he's gone. Like you've been referring to, he's either consistently good or consistently bad. There's no middle ground with him. The primary reason why I think they're keeping him around right now is as insurance for Mason, which is why I think Berube's playing him so much this year. I don't think Mason's fully recovered from his injuries. I think the Flyers kind of rushed him back to get back into the playoff hunt, which backfired big time. I could definitely see them going after another solid backup goaltender, because in the NHL you need at least two goaltenders to rotate in and out, because your number one's not going to always be able to do it. It's not like the 90s where you could rely on your number one to play like 75, 80 games a year. So you're going to have to get a solid backup like a Chad Johnson or a Michael Nuvarez.
Yeah, and they're going to have to restructure a lot of these contracts, because Paul Holmgren gave out big contracts like candy. I mean, McDonald's huge. I mean, some of these guys are obviously deservingly so, like Giroux. And Ryan, I meant to mention this earlier when you were talking about trading Giroux at the deadline. He still owed a significant amount. He still owed around $50 million going forward past this year. Actually, the next 4 years, he's going to make $9 million annually. So he's due to make about $56 million. So if they were to trade him, they'd have to eat up a significant portion, which seems to be the Phillies' problem, obviously, besides keeping players past their prime and past a certain age. You got to be willing to eat up a certain amount of money if you're willing to move him. And I don't know. It would definitely bring back a lot of pieces. I still think this team isn't that far away. They just need to get rid of some pieces. What do you guys see happening with LeCavalier? Because he's still on contract for a few more years. Actually, he's owed $7.5 million, and he's going to be on the books for two more years. But yet, Berube has been scratching him for over like 15 games this year. Although obviously there were some games where LeCavalier had an injury, but yet he'll play Zach Rinaldo, who even if he doesn't do something stupid, he has a bad reputation. So there's been games where a guy's hit him and he'll go to the penalty box just because of his bad reputation. So do you guys see him trading LeCavalier maybe at the draft, or keeping him and maybe Berube goes on? Ryan, what do you make of LeCavalier's deal? Because this year he's in 51 games. He only has 18 points, and he has a 26-game goalless drought.
I think LeCavalier's future with the Flyers is really dependent on who's the head coach. If Berube's behind the bench, I think LeCavalier is pretty much as good as gone, because I don't know why, but I think Berube has it out for LeCavalier. I don't think he likes him. I can see the Flyers keeping LeCavalier if they can bring in Babcock. Like I was saying to you a couple weeks ago, I think Babcock likes LeCavalier. I think he likes those big-bodied centers that can crash the net. I do think that he may experiment with LeCavalier, see if he can recapture some magic and put him up on the first line with, like, Giroux and Voracek. But if they were to trade LeCavalier, I think his most likely destination would be Nashville. And I do think he could bring back maybe a third or a fourth, but nothing too flashy.
Yeah, at his age, I mean, honestly, it's not really. He's actually going to turn 35 a month from today, and he's been in the league for over 15 years. What do you see happening with LeCavalier, Dan?
It's tough, man. I'm not really sure. I haven't honestly been watching as many games to see how he's been playing, but see, I don't think he's going to be going anywhere. Not for a year or two. I could be
wrong.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, he signed for two more years, so you see him playing out that contract?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I agree with both of you that it's just, I don't think teams are going to be willing to pick up. It's not necessarily the money, it's just part of it's the money, part of it's his age. I mean, he still could be a good third or fourth line, probably a fourth line player, or maybe even a decent second line player, if he's depending on the players he's playing around on a certain team, but I don't think teams were willing to part with certain picks unless it was a really low one. So we'll see what happens with that. And what do you see happening with Berube? Dan, do you see him coming back next year?
You know what? I think he's going to come back next year too. I don't know what's going to happen with the whole team. I don't know how many people he's going to think about getting rid of, what Snyder's thinking of, what Hextall's thinking of, but this whole situation with Chip Kelly is the same thing. It's going to be something that's going to be up Ed Snyder's sleeves, too. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Do you see him going next year, Ryan?
Yeah, I think he's as good as gone. I think it was a mistake when they hired him to begin with, and Snyder's beginning to realize that now. I think that the real Berube is starting to show up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, who knows if they were tuning out LaViolette. Obviously, they had two straight, zero and three starts, but still, it'll be interesting to see if they wrote it out with LaViolette, and obviously, we all know what he's doing with Nashville now, but the Flyers are 10 points out of the final wild card spot with two more games, but I want to thank you guys for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Dan, it was good to have you on for the first time, and Ryan, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.